Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
My name is Brian Branco. It was a clear blue sunny day sky. There was not a cloud in the sky, about 70 degrees in the morning. Air traffic controllers call it severe clear. They could see forever. That's the idea behind it. My first day back early in the office, I was a consultant for Thompson Financial Baseline. I wasn't a full-time employee, but I was a consultant for him. I was there about three days a week. And Tuesday would be one of my days in early. The week before, Vice President Bob Levine was trying to kid me. He's like, when are you going to come back in early? So I'll be back in on Tuesday, one of my normal days. So I was in about 7:30, quarter to 8 that morning. The company had software, so the stock market. So people didn't have to actually be in the office until about 9:15. But I worked with the accounting people, and Bob was an early person. So it was about quarter to 9, and I was sitting at my desk. My view was a southeast view, Brooklyn Bridge, Manhattan Bridge, that type of view. I felt a little vibration. Not never really thought about that much. I was in the South Tower on 78. And out my window, I saw papers flying. So I thought maybe something, for the weirdest thing ever, I thought like the air conditioner blew or something. I don't know why I thought that. But we're in a sky lobby. So if you worked on 84, you would take an express to 78 and then take a local to 84. But I worked on the floor where the elevator stopped. So that's the sky lobby, it was called. And somebody said Tower 1 got hit by a plane. I thought a little Cessna. I thought it was a two-seater plane, went into the building, went back to my desk, called my wife, real quick conversation. I bought a sports car in the summertime. And this is a Tuesday. The Friday before, I wouldn't let her drive it. So we were fighting all weekend. And so I called her and I said, listen, something happened in Tower 1. It got hit by a plane or something. And she goes, what, the moron didn't see the building? I said, listen, I can't talk to you right now. And she goes, whatever, and hangs up on me. Oh, and that morning when I went to work, she wiped the kiss off my face. She goes, go to work. So we don't do that anymore. So basically, the plan we had was to go downstairs, see what's going on, and go back up. I was leaving with Steven Weinberg, and he said, on 78, and he said to me, I forgot something in my office. And I said, I'll see you downstairs. I went straight to the elevators. He turned right to his office. And just like I said, we were on a sky lobby. So sky lobby was packed because you had to come, if you were above us, you had to come down to my floor to get to the elevator. So I got in the sky lobby and waiting for the elevators, and it was busy. It was really packed. Honestly, five or six women were there in the 1993 bombing, if you're familiar with that. But they had their arms locked. And I got an exit elevator with them. I don't know how, I got some memory loss up there. I remember being in the elevator going down. They went down, up and down 800 feet in about a minute. I remember being in the elevator and everybody screaming, it's going back up, it's going back up. Because as it gets towards the bottom, it's got to slow down. I'm like, no, it slowed down. It's slowing down to stop. When the doors opened up, my exit would have been Liberty Street. To the left, it looked like a war zone. Building security was keeping us away from there and pushing us into the mall. There are stories that, oh, let me go back to that. So I remember being in the mall and the police yelling, get out of the building, get out of the building. And I'm like, but building security is pushing everybody in here. There's like no rhyme or reason. This is basically total chaos. But kind of keeping us away from Tower 1. So the first level of the building was building access in the shopping mall. So everybody's going into the shopping mall. And I ended up walking all the way to the other side of the mall. So I walked basically north, exited the mall. And I had no idea where I was. Because either I drove in and I parked in the parking lot right next to the building, which fortunately that day I did not. Or I would take the ferry over, which I did that morning. And the company I worked for bought lunch every day. So I never went outside. I had no idea where I was. So I ended up walking several blocks east for some reason. I needed to go west, several blocks east because I had no idea where I was. I remember looking down a street and saying, "Oh, that's the water down there. There's a movie theater by the World Financial Center. I'll go down there. My car, the ferry's behind there. I'll go get my car and I'll call Bob and tell him I'm coming in tomorrow." And as soon as we turned the corner to go down there, I felt it on the ground. I felt the pressure from it. I felt the heat from it. 80 floors down, 800 feet down. I've never saw it. I was too close to it. Manhattan, you have canyon and you can't see the top of a building. So I felt it. We all ran into an entrance on 100 Barclay Street, made it out through the lobby of that building, ended up on Church Street. I ended up walking north. As I walked, cell phones were down. I had a cell phone. AT&T was down, or cellular, singular one, whoever it was back then. Verizon had phones. I'm like, I'm gonna go buy a phone, but then I have to figure out how to charge it because they worked. And I ended up walking north. I stopped at payphones. I'm sure you guys don't even know what payphones are. I stopped at payphones several times to call my wife, but I didn't want to wait in line. So I walked until I found one that had no line of one person. I called her and she knew in the beginning, she didn't know where I was. But then, I don't know, I'm not sure what time it was, but it wasn't too far after she saw what was going on. She knew I was out of the building. I ended up walking north. I ended up getting, I need to, like I said, I need to New Jersey. No trains were running out of city, in or out of the city. No, the bridges were closed. The tunnels were closed. Nothing in Manhattan was coming in other than ferries. It was the largest water rescue ever done. I ended up going up to Midtown Manhattan, probably, I can't tell you how many miles up there. I just walked up there, right behind Madison Square Garden. Around that area, there's a ferry station up there, New York Waterway. They're commuter ferries. They hold about 200 people each. And I asked somebody where the line was for the ferry, and somebody told me the line stretched for 19 city blocks. So these are boats that hold 200 people, and there's 19 blocks of people waiting to get on these boats. I'm like, this doesn't work. I ended up getting lucky. I got the Circle Line boats. They hold a lot of people. They do tours around Manhattan. I got on second or third boat over to New Jersey, ended up walking around Jersey City. I kind of knew where I was a little bit. Ended up getting to the Lincoln Tunnel. So it's a big helix, a big, like almost a circle coming into the Lincoln Tunnel. That road, of course, was closed coming in. And by the time I got to Jersey, my phone worked. For some reason, it just kicked on and worked in Jersey. And I called my wife and she's like, "Where are you?" I said, I'm walking. I'm in Jersey." She's like, "I'll come get you." I said, "Everything is closed." So she came as far east as she can get me, and she picked me up probably about 2 or 3 miles from her house. The first thing she said to me is, she goes, "How come you're not covered in white dust?" I said, "What are you talking about?" And she goes, "The buildings fell." I said, "You're out of your blank mind that the buildings fell." She goes, "They fell." I said, "I don't believe you." Also, somebody on the ferry said that to me. I remember looking down the river and seeing smoke, white smoke coming from down there, and somebody said the buildings fell. And I had not nice words for him either. I got home. I was home about 2:30 in the afternoon. We watched the buildings fall 3 or 4 times. I said, "Turn the TV off. I can't watch my friends die," over and over again. And that's what we did. My daughter was 7 years old at the time. She was in third grade. They walked into her class and told the class, "If you go home for lunch, don't turn the television on because two planes hit the World Trade Center." And my daughter at 7 years old goes underneath her breath, "Thank God it wasn't the Twin Towers." And the teacher's assistant goes, "Oh, honey, it's the same building," and walks away. And our best friend, Anthony, who's still our best friend 30 years, probably about 25 years now, at least, got up and said her dad works there. They pulled her out of class. They called my wife. My wife went and picked her up. But I was home at 2:30 in the afternoon. It was a tough day. I remember that night, Bob's wife calling, "Have you seen Bob? Have you seen Bob?" I remember Bob's cousin or niece calling, "Where's Bob? Where's Bob?" I remember my daughter had all her friends over in the basement. They were hanging out in the basement. She was 7, like I said, and it was fine. My neighbors came up. My one neighbor's son, he passed away, but he was a comedian. He was actually my daughter's second best friend, we can say. And that night, we live in New Jersey. We're probably about 15 miles from the Trade Center site, but if you walk up to the cliff from 2 blocks from off my house, you can see New York City skyline. And people were going up there constantly. The police were going up and blocking cars from coming up. And James that night had a Brian got out of the World Trade Center barbecue, and he told every single person I got out of the building. So that was basically the day. Well, kind of, sort of.
Thank you for sharing that. And those of you who are on here, go ahead and keep messaging your questions. Were there people that you recall or remember who helped you along the way, or were there moments that you recall where you were helping other people?
And I've talked to people. I'm like, come on, you gotta get out of here. Like, let's go. Things along those lines. I was talking. I've talked to people in the streets. I'm like, you shouldn't be here. Kind of. I mean, I didn't force anybody. I'm like, you just need to get away from this area, because you didn't know what was gonna happen. Well, I think I can't say what I knew, because it's kind of in retrospect, like, what if there's another plane? But I wasn't thinking that at that time. I didn't actually know what's going on, really, till I got home, and maybe a day or two later, until I actually comprehended it after watching it a dozen times, just kind of, playing it over and over again. I'm like, and then hearing about, as I was walking, I heard the Pentagon got hit, the White House got hit, the Capitol got hit. Like, you didn't know what to believe. So those are things I kind of heard, but I don't think I actually comprehended everything, anything, until that night, maybe the next day, even.
How would you say that surviving, the biggest attack in our country's history, if not like world history, like recorded history, how did surviving that attack kind of change your outlook on life, on everyday life?
It took me a while to deal with it. It took me a long time to deal with it. In the beginning, I was useless for weeks. I couldn't do anything. I was just kind of useless. Going on 6 months, a year, you're thankful. You become thankful because, I cannot be here. I don't like to say that, but, in reality, I could not make the decisions I did. And a lot of it is survivor's guilt, which I have 24 years later, because Stephen didn't get out. And, what if I outlawed that word in my house? Because that those words can make you crazy. What if I did this? What if you did I didn't do this? What if we outlawed those words? But over the years, I got involved. Took me a while. It took me several years. I got involved with first the World Trade Center Survivors Network. I found them a week after the third anniversary, on the stupid things you remember. I can't remember yesterday, but I remember sitting in an oil change place, getting my oil change, like October of 2004, and I pick up Time magazine, and on the cover of Time magazine, you're talking about the World Trade Center Survivors Network, and I'm like, what is this? I went home, I found it. And I talked to people for 11 months online. They did some in-person stuff, which I didn't need. I needed, but I didn't need. And I ended up meeting them, everybody, 30, 40 people I talked to for 11 months on the fourth anniversary in one of the offices by the World Trade Center site. And we went to the ceremony. So it helped me to be involved with people, get involved with things. Along those lines, we got involved with another organization called Strength to Strength. Sari Singer was in Lower Manhattan on 9/11. She wasn't in the area, but she was in Lower Manhattan. And she went back to Israel because she wanted to make a difference and volunteer and help. She was in bus bombing 21 years ago in June. And she started this organization that she pulls in people from all over the world who have been in terrorist attacks. And we help each other. She'll do retreats. She goes spend a weekend together. She'll do anything like that. She has, WhatsApp groups. She has private Facebook groups, and it just kind of helps to, people. Everybody has a different story, but we all get it basically. If you say something, even on a the World Trade Center, even on the Survivors Network, that I found, there's people from Oklahoma City. So Oklahoma City was April 19th, 1995. It was a domestic terrorist attack. And on there, Dot and Joanne would, I would post something, and they were 5, 6 years difference from us, 5 and a half years. And they were like, well, it might be not okay today, but tomorrow will be okay. And I always tell, I've told them, to, we're still friends this year, to this day. And I say, you guys gave me that, light at the end of the tunnel, because maybe today I'm not doing good, and maybe, but tomorrow, based on what you guys are saying, it'll be better.
I love
So
that.
really just kind of getting involved in a lot of stuff.
I love that. I mean, you're taking that mess and making it a message. And it's just it's unreal. It's unreal. We have a question from Miss Wilkerson's class. You guys can go ahead and unmute to have your students ask if you can. One sec. All right, might be having difficulty. Oh, there you go. Go ahead. No, nada. Okay, I'll ask. They just want to know, what was your location during the attacks?
I was on the 70th, well, I was on the 70th floor of the South Tower when the North Tower got hit, when our building got hit, and we were the impact floor, 77, 74 to 84, with 77 being, and 78 being the primary impact floors. I was a block away. I was outside the building, well, maybe 2 blocks away. I was outside the building, trying to figure out where I was when the second plane came in.
So, what, how did 9, did 9/11 affect your career at all? I mean, 'cause you're working in such a high tower, and then I can't imagine that that would be comfortable to go back and work in a building.
Well, the company I worked for, the owner sold the business, but he was the president of the company. Their his philosophy, and Thompson Financial is a very big company who bought them, I think that summer, maybe that summer or summer before, I don't remember. And they left us alone. Thompson Financial left us alone. They're like, Rob, you take care of this. And Rob's words were basically, you come first, take care of yourself. And you want to leave early, you want to come in late, you need a 2-hour lunch. And nobody took advantage of it, but that helped a lot of people, including me. Again, I was a consultant, I wasn't a full-time employee. And he was like, anything you need, Brian, you come to me. And that to me was the best thing he could have did for his entire staff, even people that weren't there. Got this treatment because they were affected. I mean, you lost coworkers, you lost your building, stuff like that. As far as going into buildings, I don't go into tall buildings anymore. I went up to the observation deck in the World Trade Center, the new World Trade Center, a couple times. I have no problems going up there with friends. We brought friends in a couple times, stuff like that. I haven't been up there in several years. I don't need my work. I don't need to go into tall buildings, and I don't really need to come to Manhattan really anymore that much. I was going to Manhattan a little bit, but I was seventh floor, 10th floor, stuff like that. Last The beginning of this year, I didn't make a mistake. Some company I do work for wanted me to go to training, and it was at Hudson Yard. I'm like, I never thought about it. So Hudson Yard is like a big up and coming area in Midtown Manhattan. Well, I didn't realize until I went there to get my pass that the training was on the 50th floor. And I haven't, other than the observation deck, I haven't been that high in 24 years. And thank goodness that the room we were in didn't have windows, because I was walking around the building waiting for people to come in and doing introductions and stuff. And I stood there looking for planes. I hated it, but that's what I did. I looked down the river, Hudson River, towards the building. You can see the building from this building, the new building, and I'm looking for planes. And I'm like, this is not right. I mean, I shouldn't have been here, but I had to stick with the training for 4 days. I think it was 4 days. But like I said, I don't need to go in tall buildings anymore. I have no desire to do it.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine. And I've been fortunate enough to meet yourself and your wife. You guys are lovely people, and
Thank
going down to the Trade Center Museum was an unforgettable experience. But what was even more unforgettable was connecting with you and you sharing about New York's response and that unity. And I wanted to see if you could maybe touch on that for the students as far as that unity and people helping strangers and all that kind of stuff.
Everybody helped everybody. People came from all over the country, and I know people came from all over the world just to help people. It was, you're Midtown Manhattan and you needed, I don't know, a bus pass. Here's a bus pass. You needed some food. I'll buy you some food. I mean, it was whatever people can do for people, they did. And it wasn't just the first responders. I mean, everybody helped the first responders. Don't get me wrong. But it was really everybody here came together. And really, I understand over the country and pretty much over the world, at that point, people were just united because you had all these first responders coming from all over the country to help in a cleanup or recover. I'm sorry, first look for recovery efforts and then do a cleanup. And it was just an amazing time to see this stuff. It was just amazing to experience that, there was no. There was no political thing. There was no race thing. There was no nothing. It was, you need help, I will help you. And to me, that's the best thing you can do. And we don't do that anymore, unfortunately. But back then, that got through a lot of people, including me, a lot of issues that I had because you would see this on TV. The news would cover it locally. I'm not sure if they did nationwide, but locally they did it. Things along those lines, and it was just amazing to see.
We have a question, and I was kind of wanted to touch on this. Can you talk about the importance of when storms happen in someone's life? And we'll all have storms. Why is it important to lean into our family members and our support systems?
My wife couldn't have done enough for me. She says she's done nothing, but she was my stone. She was my rock. And you need to lean when you need to lean on people, lean on them, because they know they haven't gone through your experience, whatever it may be, but they're here to help you. And she did. She still does to this day. I mean, I have a bad. I've done this for 23 years. Went to the anniversary. We go to the anniversary. We'll be there on Thursday to support my coworkers' families. My bad time starts usually in the middle of August. Little pieces kind of builds up until the 11th or till the 10th for some reason. The past several years, it's been instead of the build up in the middle of August, it starts September 1st. And it's kind of good in a way because my wife's our anniversary, my wife's birthday is the end of August, and we always go away. And it helps me to go away. But then I roll up, 4 weeks of build up into 11, 10 days. And it's horrible. And she leans, she wants to help. And I know she wants to help. And I don't want to burden her because 24 years later, it's the same thing. I've done this 23 years. It's the same thing. But she wants to help. And she does. The other night we went down to see the lights. They were testing the tribute lights, the blue lights that are up. We went down there. We spent about 2 hours down there. It just, lean on people. I mean, you're not doing them any harm by telling them the same, whatever your event is or whatever your problem is, you're not doing them any harm by telling them, I feel this way. I still feel this way. I still feel this way. It's nothing. Lean on them because they're there and they ask you, they want to help you.
So where you say that we weren't meant to live life alone. And
That's
that's,
correct.
yeah. So one of our schools hit me up and they want to know what was your initial reaction when the plane hit Tower One. Now, something to add, it's the sound, they were soundproof buildings. So can you reiterate on that a little bit?
Basically, I didn't hear anything. I felt it. So I felt a little vibration. That's all I really felt. And a couple minutes later, I saw the paper flying out my window. But really, I heard nothing. I did not hear an explosion. I didn't hear anything. That's how quiet it was. It was basically the papers flying that, I don't want to say triggered something, but maybe be a little curious, I guess you can kind of say. But if there were no papers flying, like I couldn't, I don't, like I said, I don't do the what if thing, but if there weren't papers flying, I don't know. I don't know.
So when you knew that it was an attack, like what was your reaction, would you say?
I don't think I can't, well, several days later, I could say, I mean, this is completely crazy. Like, why, what happened? And we didn't know, of course, why, you know, why it happened 3 days later. In the beginning, I had no comprehension that it was an attack. I had no, I wasn't comprehending anything. Like I said, when I was walking, I heard the Pentagon got hit, the White House got hit, the Capitol got hit. But I don't think I really put together it's an attack until later on, maybe. Does it make sense?
Yes,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Okay.
So with those that you knew that lost their lives that day, I know you mentioned that you guys go to the Trade Center for the tribute on the 11th. Are there any other ways that you guys honor those who didn't make it out?
I have a tattoo with their names on my arm. And I can show you guys. Oh, I have two. First, I have this one. I don't know if you can kind of see that one. It's kind of not bad lighting here. That's a quote from a museum. No day shall erase you from the memory of time, with the towers and then Flight 93 and the Pentagon and the 1993 bombing. So, and I always wear cutoff shirts. I don't wear shirts with sleeves. When I go to work, I wear shirts with sleeves. But anytime otherwise, I wear shirts with cutoff sleeves and shorts. But to honor them, I got this tattoo done. Bob, Jill, and Steve. And it's kind of blurry now, but that's where I was. Things along those lines. But that's how I honor them, because people will recognize this one. Can I take a picture? Yes, but you need to take a picture of this one because this is the one that counts. You know, I've tried to help primarily Linda's family. You know, we're very close with them. Actually, it's a sad thing. Her father was a firefighter. Jill's father was a firefighter. And several years ago, he died in a 9-11. Jake, I'm sorry, I'm gonna go back a step. Jake was Jill's son. He crawled that day on 9-11 for the first time. She never saw him crawl. His grandparents ended up raising him, Jeannie and Joe. His grandfather died several years ago, 10 maybe more, of 9-11 related cancer. He was a firefighter, ended up looking for his daughter for 8.5 months. So we really became close with them. We met them the first year we went to the Survivors Network onto the site, 2005, September 11, 2005. And I looked over to these people and I said, "That's Jill's family," to my wife. I said, "How do you," she goes, "How do you know?" I said, "They're wearing her button. They're wearing a picture of her. Come on." So it took me a lot of courage to go over and talk to them. And I did. I'm glad I did. And I met them. I met her parents. I met her sister, Linda. I met Jake. Jake was on September 11th, was 10 years old, and she never saw him crawl. I probably said this stuff already, but I can repeat myself. And her father's a big firefighter guy. And we met them. We talked to them. And he goes, at the end, he goes to my wife, "How do you feel with having some other woman's name on your husband's arm?" And she goes, "Don't worry, she's worth it." And
That's
then there's a Reverend Bill. He Jeannie showed Reverend Bill my name, her name on my arm, and he blessed my arm. So those are kind of things, you know, that we do to honor them. You know, they're very close to us. Linda, unfortunately, her sister passed away a couple years, 3 years ago. So it's really Jake and Jeannie. And that's really happening. We're going to see Jake. We're going to see both of them on Thursday. Jake was up in New Hampshire. And I called him about a month ago. I said, "Are you coming down for a ceremony? Because if you're not, I'm going to Queens to get your grandmother at 6 o'clock in the morning." He goes, "No, I will be there, because it's important for me to her, point for me to have her come. And she needs to be there." So we do things like that. I met Steve's kids several times. And Bob was just older. I never met his wife, or he has one kid, I think. I never met them. But really, the Mauers are really people that I met and were very, very close with.
Can you, we'll let you go in a couple minutes. Can you talk to the kids? And first of all, thank you for coming year after year to share your story. Can you talk
Definitely.
about why you think the importance of sharing these stories year after year to each new upcoming generation? Why is that so important?
You guys were young and you weren't even born then to know any of this. I hope they teach it to you in the schools. They don't really teach it here in New Jersey. My wife does. She's an art teacher and she teaches it. I think she'll do a day or two on it. And I've talked to kids, I've talked to students in person. I've done. It's important that you guys know what happened, and it's important that you guys know what happened correctly, let me say, because there's a lot of rumors out there. There's a lot of, stuff people say and, unproven things. And, it's important that you guys get it. What information you get from the right source. There's rumors that the buildings were blown up. There's rumors about this. There's rumors about that. And it's just, it's to me, it's simple. And I've said this to many people. I fought with the called truthers. I fought with truthers down there. I'm like, two planes hit two buildings and they fell. How hard is it to understand? And for you guys, just learn what happened because it's history. It's like, it's like I'm sure, I say to my wife all the time, the schools don't get to it here because there's 20 battles of World War II, which are important. Okay, but this is not modern history anymore, but it's history. And it needs to be taught and needs to be understood. And if you ever come to New York, you go to the museum because the National Museum will teach you about that day. And you're going to go through and see an amazing museum. It's sad and depressing. Okay. And then what we always do, well, when we have friends, we go to a local bar, which I know you can't go to, but you go outside, you take a deep breath, and you enjoy life because life is short. You guys are young, life is short, and you need to just appreciate it and appreciate everything. And one thing I always tell the kids, life is short. Don't be mean. I mean, enjoy your life. Don't be nasty to your parents. Don't give your parents a hard time. And I know people just say that to you. But to me, the reason being is you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And, you don't want to your last conversation with a parent or a loved one that we had an argument. It's not worth it to live with it. Just be nice people, go out and do some good, do some volunteer work. I'm not sure what age you guys are, but do some volunteer work if you can and just give back because if you have a good life, there's no reason to give back. It doesn't cost you anything other than a little bit of time. And that to me is, we did volunteer work for many years. There's a museum called the Tribute Museum, used to be there. Everybody who volunteered had some kind of personal connection. We used to do tours of people. And I tell them the same thing. Then when the National Museum opened up, my wife and I were docents. We talked to people about the day. More of a official role, you can kind of say, but volunteer. We did it from May of 2014 when the National Museum opened up to COVID, March 2020. That we never went back after that. But, that's kind of my take.
No, it's good. That's good. One of the students messaged and they wanted to know how has September 11th influenced your views on personal safety and emergency preparedness? Has it shifted anything regarding that?
You have to pay attention. They do drills, and I know they do them in school a lot, but you know what? They're important because, I was fortunate. I took an elevator down. Okay, the company I worked for had 19 people on 78 on 77 and four of seven on 5 and 78. Me and another guy, Miles, left. Those people walked down 77 flights of stairs because they knew where the stairs were. They knew the procedures. They knew everything because there was training for that. If the primary fire training was not plane training, but fire training to get out. So, to do any kind of, I think drills like that, I mean, they're safety drills, they're important drills. And it's nothing to joke about because Whoever thought a plane would hit a building? Nobody. Something, you have a fire in your school or worse, you need to be able to deal with that and get out and see your parents.
Great. Thank you for that advice. And we'll let you go. But before we let you go, before I end the meeting for all, I'm gonna allow everyone, can we all unmute and can we say thank you to Brian for taking the time out of his day to talk to you guys? I can't thank you enough, sir. I don't think they can unmute, but thank you
It's
so
okay.
much for all that you
Thank
do.
you, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy your day, seriously.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.